and welcome back to Voices of Student Success, Inside Higher Ed's podcast series on student retention, engagement, and graduation strategies. I'm your host, Ashley Maurer, Student Success Reporter for Inside Higher Ed. Thanks for joining us today. This series is a companion to our Student Success Newsletter, a weekday publication that provides ideas and inspiration for higher education practitioners who work in or care about student success. In the podcast, I'll be sitting down with guests who can give you a national perspective on student success or a solutions-based approach at their institution. This week, we're looking at parents, or parenting students to be more exact. Attending and completing college is a big undertaking for many, and for those who are caring for more than just themselves, juggling school and life can be even more challenging. National data estimates that around 1 in 5 students are caregivers or parents, but in actuality, there is no national record of student parents. I spoke with Deshaun Carr and Eddie Conroy from the think tank New America to learn more about the issue of student parents and the lack of data. Well, thank you both so much for being here with me. It's great speaking with you. Let's go ahead and introduce you. Eddie, if you could get started and just introduce yourself and your work.
Yeah, good morning. I'm Eddie Conroy. I'm a senior policy advisor with New America's higher education team. New America's a multi-issue public policy think tank based in DC. And amongst other things, working on financial aid issues and accountability in higher ed, I do a lot of work on our student parent project that we've been running for about 2 years now.
I'm Deshaun Carr. I'm a policy analyst at New America, working on student parent issues, just like Eddie, also working on stuff around affirmative action and anti-DEI backlash.
Yeah, you all have really easy jobs right now. Yeah. So today we're talking about student parents in higher education. I wonder if you could just give us an overview, sort of who are student parents in higher ed right now, and what are some of those trends that we do know about them?
1 in 5 students identify as student parents, according to a study long time ago from 2020 from IWPR. But we do know that majority identify as women and also women of color, particularly Black and Latinx women. They have intersectional identities. They're more than just students and they're more than just parents. They're interacting with various systems on a daily basis, whether that is interacting with some of the social safety net programs, housing issues, transportation, a lot of various things that they're interacting with on the day-to-day.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a guest last season on the podcast who talked about how higher education is not built for adults or people who have conflicting priorities. I wonder if we can talk a little bit about sort of the structures of higher ed and how it can be constricting to student parents specifically.
One, that is a completely true statement. We largely have a higher education system that was designed around 18 to early 20-somethings who were entering college straight from high school, potentially moving straight out of mom and dad's house or staying at home but going locally when they were straight out of high school. And that is still the case for some students, but for a large proportion of college-going students, that's just not what reality looks like. As Deshaun just shared, 1 in 5 are parents. More than that, just a large number, almost half of college students are older, they are veterans, they are caring sometimes not for kids, but for disabled parents, elderly parents, all kinds of different responsibilities.
Right.
And we still have this higher ed system that's built around the sort of stylized student that is like half the population at most. And you see that creep up in lots of places, particularly when it comes to parenting students, that whether it's class schedules that are a challenge to then make work around their kids' school schedules or daycare or whatever else it might be, whether it's office hours to visit the financial aid office or your advisor or one of your professors to get a letter of recommendation, that are all built around a sort of 9-to-5 workday that is often pretty challenging. And something that we've thought about as we've worked on this issue for a couple of years now, and we'll probably continue to do, is that when you think about universal design principles, if you design a system or redesign a system, as maybe we need to start doing, for the folks who have the greatest challenges accessing that system, then you make it easier for everybody else. And so if we start rethinking how higher ed works and operates for folks who are older, who are juggling all of these schedules, who are working, that's good for everybody. That's good for the 18 to 20 something who's coming straight out of high school. It makes their life simpler too, but it also makes higher ed accessible for the large number of students who have much more complicated lives than somebody who's just finished up high school.
We are doing some work around like access to childcare on community college campuses. And again, it stems out to larger, even eventually we'll probably stem out to, you know, looking at 4-year, but also childcare is a big issue that student parents need and want and can be very helpful for them in achieving their academic success. And, you know, some people want on-campus childcare, some people want drop-in childcare, some just want able to afford childcare. Put their child, you know, either pay a family member to watch their child while they're either studying or going to class for 2 hours. And we don't think in mind of like sometimes classes happen at night. A lot of student parents are taking classes at night and they don't have access to childcare because childcare centers run from 9 to 5. And if you have a, you know, an older child, they can go to an after school program or they're in school all day. But we're not thinking about how some systems typically are not designed for student parents to access, especially if they're taking classes at nighttime. Sometimes that typically gets left out. And that's one of the things that we're working on. The Center for Education and Labor at New America is looking at ways, what is working well and what's not working when it comes to providing childcare to student parents. And like I said, it doesn't have to be on campus or drop-in childcare center. It could be, you know, providing subsidies, just trying to keep those costs down. Because one thing that we're learning is childcare is super expensive. Mm-hmm. I talked to someone yesterday and they're saying that childcare right now, they're $900 per infant. And I'm just like, wow. That's not okay. So we have a childcare crisis on our hands and we're not able to figure out how we're trying to accommodate just a family in itself, but also how can we further accommodate student parents who are wanting to just to go back to school. And whether that's just getting a 2-year degree or a credential or something, but something they need to just have to study. If students want to be able to go to, you know, office hours or have a study group with a few students, you know, they're not able to do that because they have to bring their kid with them. And that narrative of people bringing children on campus, a lot of people do not agree with that.
I think that something that's really telling when it comes to student parents and the what are the challenges they face? On average, student parents have higher GPAs than students who don't have kids when they're in college. They have lower completion and retention rates and graduation rates because of all of the other things that they are trying to overcome, not because they're not equipped to be good students. If anything, they're often very clearly really highly motivated because we've done lots of focus groups with older and parenting students, and they're usually very highly motivated, not just because they want a good life for themselves, because they're trying to provide a better life for their kids. And anybody who's a parent knows that the motivating factor of trying to make sure that your kids have as good or better than you do and did is enormous. And so it's really clear when you look at that on average higher GPA that it's not the academics that are holding back the success of parenting students. It's all of the things that Deshaun is talking about. As well as, you know, I have worked a lot on sort of basic needs issues, and I was a financial aid administrator before I went into policy. All of those systems as well are almost get in the way sometimes of the success of parenting students. Financial aid was never really designed to support more than just one individual. And we have lots of limitations in public benefits around, you know, things like temporary assistance for needy families that limit how much time you can spend in higher education. These incredibly counterproductive ways that we know if somebody gets a degree, they're much less likely to ever rely on public benefits again in their life. And yet we, at the time when somebody is trying to do the very thing that we as a society have told them will help them be economically safe and successful, which is get a higher education, we make it hard for them to get a little bit of extra support so they can feed themselves, feed their kids, and get to a place where they no longer need that. And it's incredibly counterproductive.
Yeah. One of the things in this conversation that's always difficult is a lack of federal data around student parents, right? We have the 1 in 5 stat, but like you mentioned, Deshaun, that's from 2020 and it's been a lot of time since then, and higher education has changed a lot since then. What is being lost in the conversation about student parents by having a lack of data and focusing on other factors like first-time, full-time students?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if we don't have the data, then how do we expect to serve them correctly or appropriately? And I think that that has to be communicated across, you know, federally, at state level, local level, institutional level. we don't have that data. Like I said, how can we expect to serve them correctly? We don't know what their childcare needs might be. We don't know what benefits that we can connect them to, because we don't have that data. A lot of college campuses don't know that they have a student parent population. So they're just assuming and just thinking like, well, you know, we don't have adult learners. We don't have student parents on our campus. Yes, you actually do. And there's no systematically way how we can actually collect data. And a lot of various institutions right now, again, going back, referencing the childcare project we're working on, we're actually talking to colleges about like, how do you collect data on your student parents? And a lot of them are just doing a lot of patchwork to collect data. They're instituting surveys, they're doing focus groups. Again, those are definitely great practices to do, but you want to make sure that you're institutionalizing that across your campus to make sure that every, you know, semester or every quarter that you're that parenting status change. And so you want to be able to provide them with the resources that they need. And data is so, so important to this work. Last year, we had two Congress members introduce a bill. The way how Congress is structured right now, I mean, it's not going to go anywhere. But obviously, it was a step to try to, you know, collect data at the federal level. And then we do see some states right now that are working on, you know, instituting some data collection practices. But again, it takes some time. But also, you want to make sure that, you know, institutions are collecting data, having it institutionalized, also have the funding to implement that. Because again, it takes a lot to collect that data quarterly, semesterly, however they're choosing to collect it, and to understand, you know, what resources do student parents need. It's not just focusing on ways to just make sure that they have the academic resources, but again, they need housing, they need childcare, they need, you know, food. Like, where, how do you connect them with those resources if you don't know who your population is?
The other piece that gets lost sometimes with these conversations is we generally have a lack of data when it comes to higher education across the board.
Right.
That there is more for certain groups of students than others, but a lot of the data we have at the federal level relies on pulling data from folks who have applied for financial aid, so FAFSA filers, because there's not a comprehensive student level system to collect data on everybody who's going to college. So something New America's worked a lot on for a long time, the College Transparency Act, is an effort to collect data on all students that would include things like parenting status and stuff like that. That could really make a difference in helping to see what does the federal landscape look like. At the same time, the state and institutional efforts that Deshaun's talking about are also really important, because if you're an institution, the federal data is important. It's really useful for us to know that about 1 in 5 students have kids when they're in college.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't help you if you are ex-college, you know, if you're Nova out here in Northern Virginia. The federal number doesn't help you, because we know that parenting students they're not evenly distributed in where they enroll. They're much more likely to enroll at public institutions. They're much more likely to enroll at community colleges. And it's very useful then at the state or institutional level to know, okay, what does our parenting student population look like? And so all of these things have to go hand in hand. We want better federal data to see what does that picture look like, but also the more granular points that you get from state and institutional collections.
Are there examples of places that you're seeing do student parent data well, or that are promising sort of in this sphere?
I would say the conversation for the state level has just slowly started to pick up. Oregon right now has been doing a lot of work to basically institute, you know, public universities, public institutions to start collecting data on student parents. So I wouldn't say we haven't learned too much right now to see what are the promising practices, but I will say the conversation around states starting to want to collect data on student parents has been a conversation at a lot of state levels. Oregon, California, Illinois, and Texas, they're all instituting some ways to starting to collect data on student parents. And so I wouldn't say we haven't seen what those promising practices are yet. But again, we will start to see in the next couple of years what that would look like and ways to improve.
Yeah, absolutely. We've mentioned New America's student parent project a little bit, but I wonder if one of you wants to jump in and just say a little bit more about sort of how that work is going and what that looks like right now.
Yeah, so there have been lots of folks who have been working on parenting student issues for far longer than we have, for years. But New America's bread and butter has always been federal policy. And the the work that has gone on parenting students, a large amount of it, not all of it, but a lot of it has been at sort of institutional level around research and direct service to college students, some state level work. And there has been less, not none, but less at the federal policy level. And one of the sort of, I think, hopes of folks who have worked on parenting student issues for a long time is starting to figure out how do we coalesce support around parenting students the way there's support around, you know, getting help for veteran students, for first generation students, for varying groups, of which parenting students also, as Deshaun shared at the beginning, they have incredibly intersectional identities. And so often they are also first generation. They are often veterans. You know, about half of veterans who head to college have kids because they're usually older by the time they go to college. And so our work is on parenting students is really focused on how do we think through helping to coalesce all of these pieces of work to generate federal policy ideas, movement in federal policy, support for things that help parenting students, and also support for things that, as we said at the beginning, if you design for those who face the biggest challenges accessing higher ed, we help not just parenting students, but lots of different types of student. And so that's sort of the big focus, as well as then, you know, this childcare project on community college campuses that we have. That is obviously the childcare piece of things is one of the areas where parenting students have a unique need that is not necessarily shared by students with different sorts of identities. And so figuring out what does that look like alongside how do we sort of build more support at the federal level for policies and new ideas that can help parenting students succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. Where do you hope the conversation goes? And what should practitioners keep an ear out for?
I think a couple of things. The continued movement of how do we actually count this population, I think, is really important. And particularly for, you know, as somebody who was a financial aid administrator who worked on college campuses for years, knowing who is on your campus is an incredibly important part of then how do you serve those students. And so I think as more states work on data collection and as institutions figure out, okay, we need to actually see what this population looks like, that's going to be really crucial. Designing data collection so you know who's there, and then figuring out what to do with it. Because the data piece is important, but it's only the first piece of supporting folks who are going to college with kids in tow. It's then how do you design supports around helping those students? And then at the federal policy level, we're hoping to see, you know, more and continued attention on the things that can make it easier for parenting students to succeed. That includes better financial aid provision. It includes help with childcare, which frankly is not just a crisis for parenting students. It's a crisis for anybody who is trying to go to work, to do anything while you have, you know, kids who need childcare.
Yeah, I think for the part of your question about practitioners, I think those who are on campus or staff, faculty, I think keeping in mind and being more open and aware of who are the students on campus and who, you know, even if you don't have that data, I think keeping in mind that the traditional student doesn't exist anymore, being open to trying to accommodate student parents in your classroom, you know, they have other lives outside of just being in your classroom. So thinking about how, you know, ways to accommodate them. I was talking to someone the other day about, they said like the professor wouldn't want to accommodate them for, you know, their child was sick at night, so they couldn't turn in their finals. So it's just trying to be open and mindful of like, people have lives outside of college. Yes, everyone is going to college to try to, you know, make better for themselves. But at the end of the day, like, accommodate them, even if it's just extending out an open hand to say, hey, it's okay to turn this in late, or I'll give you an extra days, or here's a list of resources to support you trying to find, you know, access to childcare or access to that benefit, like finding ways to be open and mindful and thinking about ways to accommodate, yeah, student parents on your campus. Because again, that non-traditional students exist, and that traditional student doesn't exist anymore. So.
And the really painful reality that a lot of colleges are going to need to think about and face is that with the erosion of reproductive rights in certain states, we are going to see more college students who have kids That's a very difficult and painful thing to think about. But as many states have taken away women's ability to choose when and, you know, when they have children, there is inevitably going to be an increase of people who have kids, who maybe did not plan to have kids and are now struggling to figure out, how do I complete college? How do I support my child, support myself, try and create a good life for ourselves? And that needs to be a piece of this. And I think the conversations we have with practitioners, I think particularly in the states that have really eroded reproductive rights, that's already clear to them, but it's going to only, that challenge is only going to increase over the next few years.
As Deshaun mentioned, California is one of the states that's passed legislation to improve student parents' experiences in higher education. AB 2881, passed in 2022, requires the California State University System and California Community College Systems to provide basic needs support to parenting students, as well as priority registration for classes. To do this, both systems had to identify who their student parents were, creating a need for data collection and an opportunity for better data-based decision-making. I sat down with Ray Murillo, the Interim Assistant Vice Chancellor of Student Affairs, Equity, and Belonging at the California State University Chancellor's Office, to learn more about how the bill impacts public institutions in California and how the CSU is using its new data. Ray, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on the podcast. It's great to have you.
Thank you for the invitation.
Can you give us sort of a 30,000-foot overview? Who are the student parents in the California state system, and what are some of their needs, or what makes them different from the average student?
You know, what we know so far, and this is one of the things that we're improving our data, but to what we know today, because we just started with the priority registration initiative, we know that as of fall 23, that there's around 8,500 students who have self-identified as parenting students. And we're anticipating that number to probably significantly increase for fall 24. But knowing those numbers of students, 2/3 of them are undergraduate students, and 1/4 of them are graduate students, which is kind of alignment with our system, since the vast majority of our students are, in fact, undergraduate students. The class distribution, the vast majority of the parenting students are actually juniors and seniors. Very small percentage at the freshman, sophomore level, but definitely spikes to 40 to 60% between juniors and seniors. So that much we do know. The other thing is certainly quite diverse as well. So we also know that 67% of the students with dependents are in fact identified students of color. But in a snapshot, that's kind of who our students are. We certainly will revisit those data points when we get a bigger cohort of students to look at. But I think the unique challenges that the parenting students face that non-parenting students may not is really challenges with their scheduling. The childcare is the biggest issue that we're finding, is that the flexibility of childcare. Now, all of our campuses, exception of maybe one, has a childcare center on campus. However, the hours are limited. So if the student is going to class in the evening, our childcare centers do only open till 5 at the very latest, 6 p.m. So the childcare needs do pose a challenge, as well as just the scheduling. The classes are on different days on different times, and getting childcare to accommodate that flexible schedule is sometimes a challenge as well. But overarching also, just with that, the cost that is associated with parenting students, they have additional costs that other students may not have. Of course, family costs, childcare costs, food, clothing, you know, they have other dependents that's relying on them to provide these resources. So those are two of the largest challenges for students who are parenting.
Yeah, absolutely. I know the California Assembly passed a bill, AB 2881, that sort of addressed some of these challenges and, or at least sought to create some different solutions. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what that bill was and how it changed some of the systems at the CSU?
Yeah, so the bill did two things. One, it provided priority registration for students who are parenting or with minor dependents. But it also asks that all of our campuses put resources on each of our websites to allow the students to find and locate on and off campus resources for them. So we've done that, and that's where we get the data that I was sharing earlier, and which is why we know in the fall 24, now that more students are learning about it, is probably going to go increase. Because when we implemented it in July of 23, many of the enrollment windows had already passed for fall 23. So now we're in a full cycle of it. So we're anticipating to that to go up. But really, for the system, the largest takeaway, one, aside from students being able to identify and get the prior registration and the resources and everything, is really had us take a closer look at the data collection and the need that we need to do. So that's what we're currently doing, is really looking at options to better identify the students. And then we can do a lot of other information and analysis with that data collection of, you know, persistence rates, retention, graduation, and impacts on that, time to degree, and so forth. So that's what we're, at least in the forward thinking, looking to do with the data.
Yeah, absolutely. I know the California state system has quite a few initiatives just when it comes to retention, persistence, and some of these other student success metrics. Do you anticipate student parents, you mentioned, you know, they might, that might be something that you're able to do with the data, but what could that look like now that you have those numbers and you can identify those students more accurately?
Well, it's just really being more proactive with the students. And if we know who they are, there's a number of different campus centers that are helping working with students one-on-one. Many of our campuses have case managers that do a number of things, work with a number of different student populations. And this is being another one. So our counseling centers are talking about this, house centers, but also the case managers are looking at how do we work with the students to make sure they're getting the support services that they need, connecting them to state services like CalWORKs, CalFresh, and also the campus, the U.S. Department of Ed campus grants for childcare services and stuff like that. So it's really, really taken us in a place to look at the student holistically in making sure that they're getting the services. The other piece of that is also educating the campus itself so that students and faculty, staff, and administrators understand what the needs are of the students also. So there may be times that everyone needs to understand, even the students' peers, that you might not be able to go to that out-of-classroom study group or project group at 8 o'clock in the morning on Saturday or something. There's other needs that come into play that other students might not, aside from work, have to think about. So it's just educating the campuses about that. And one, the existence of student parenting is first off, but then those unique needs that the scheduling and the challenges and demands are in fact different.
Yeah, absolutely. How have you seen different institutions implement or use this data to guide their decision-making processes?
So Fresno State really has been our lead campus looking at this. So they've really been looking at the data very closely. So they are one of our first that came out and providing clothing. They have a Bulldog Boutique that provides clothing for all the dependents from infants all the way to children. So they're looking at the needs and doing some work with that as far as the graduation. But it's still really early because it's really early that we're looking at this to do anything more than that. I haven't seen any analysis in regards to retention or graduation rates yet, but I'm sure that, again, will be forthcoming.
Right. When it came to identifying student parents, I know it was a bit of an opt-in process for that priority registration, but what are some of the challenges in just letting student parents know that this is an available option to them?
Yeah, it still remains an opt-in. The students still, like many other student categories and populations, need to self-identify with us. But I think that really is just awareness. The more now that it's out there, the one thing I could tell you, working on a number of different college campuses in our central office, word of mouth among students travels very quickly, for better or worse. So now that the students
really
know, we got 8,500 students that are getting priority registration, they will spread that word for us. But the other piece is also during the registration windows is to also put pop-ups and alerts for students to let them know that, hey, right, you may be able to eligible for priority registration, and let the students self-identify and give them that process. So it's really twofold. One, hopefully the word of mouth will work in our favor, but also that is the awareness on campus and students and our websites, informing students who go to our websites about resources, see that priority registration is in fact one of the resources that can utilize on our campuses.
Yeah, absolutely. I know data collection is difficult for a lot of different institutions when it comes to some of these adult populations. I think veteran students are another one. What advice or insight would you give to an administrator who's looking to reach some of these groups that need to self-identify or come forward with their information?
You know, it's a multi-pronged approach. One, the quick data that we're getting is because students are getting the priority registration. That's the easy one. The other piece is just, in fact, you know, once a student gets connected with basic needs or programs like our Education Opportunity Program, Foster Youth, you mentioned veterans, all of these other programs, and even our Project Rebound programs, really just start inquiring students, hey, are you in this situation? Do you need resources? Do you tap them into the resources? And just really from a case management, but also from an advising standpoint, just asking those probing questions of, hey, we have these resources, just so you know, without necessarily asking, do you have a dependent or something like that? But at least get in the habit of just asking that question of, you know, here's some resources. And it's not just this one, but there's a myriad of other resources they can be asking the student about, and then just help spread that constant reminder that we have these resources. We do send out notices about the websites and stuff, but, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We just need to get in the space where the students are. So I know some of our campuses are utilizing social media, text messaging messages. Email usually is not the most effective way to communicate. Text messaging and X, formerly known as Twitter, probably much more receptive to that than they are in email. So just trying to figure out what best communicates and reaches a student.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you mentioned, still developing this wealth of data and sort of going through it at the different levels. What can we expect next from the Cal State system when it comes to working with this data or figuring out what's next for student parents?
Yeah, really the biggest thing is just us figuring out a formal way to collect the data. I mean, we have data in two places, well, really in one place, but we have to look at it in two different places. We have our campus level data, which is 23 different data sets. And then we have our central office that we can combine all of this data into one system-wide data. And then we could disaggregate by campus and all the other stuff that we want to do. But it's developing that mechanism to collect the data. There's a number of ways that students or campuses are collecting the data on campus to identify the priority registration. But they will vary from campus to campus. So we just need to work with the campuses. If they have a system that works, then how do they feed us the data on our upload data, on our enrollment stuff? So that's really the biggest thing, is the mechanics of the data collection. And then once we get that, then we can kind of do a number of different things, not only the analysis. We can think about doing a dashboard on whatever the data elements are for students so that campuses could see their own dashboards on students, their time to degree, again, like I said, enrollment, number of units attending, financial need, and all that stuff, Cal eligibility, and we can do all of that type of information. We're just trying to create that welcomed environment. All of our campuses have pantries, but 19 or 20 of them also provide diapers, wipes, food, baby food, and some with clothing, as I mentioned, Fresno State, already with that. The other thing is for creating that welcome environment. The one activity I actually loved when I read about it, Cal State Fullerton, they have this program called Tiny Titan Bundle. When they learn that a student, which they refer to as Titans because they're the Cal State Fullerton Titans, that is pregnant, they actually will provide them with a Tiny Titan bundle that includes a backpack, a diaper bag, the books for the mom and dad, the baby, a CSUF onesie, a baby beanie, and receiving blanket. So, and that really speaks to sometimes I think what some of the students run into, but also may feel just internally, the stigma of becoming pregnant at the age that they might become pregnant at, either as a transitional age, or even just the stigma of being an older student and having the children and no one else is in their situation. So I think that to me was like one of the most welcoming, at least, initiatives that I read about.
Yeah. You know, we talked about how it's important to have this data to let the campus community know who is a student parent when it comes to supporting them. But also, I think it's important for student parents to be able to say, okay, I'm one of many, right? Like, this data helps support student parents feel as though they're not alone on their campus as well, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And, and that probably could be some of the outshoots that I think some of the campus programs are doing, is really developing that community and make sure that, you know, people don't feel that they're not the only ones encountering this situation and so forth, and that the university is ready to also support them.
Well, Ray, thank you so much. It was wonderful chatting with you. Thanks again for your time.
And a very big thank you to our listeners for joining us today for this episode of Voices of Student Success. Next episode, we're looking into career preparation strategies and how institutions can best equip their students to succeed in their next steps after college. That's all for this episode. I'm Ashley Maurer, and I'll see you real soon.